everyone, and welcome to the Primordial Soup Pot. My name is Aaron.
And I'm Rustin.
Every 2 weeks, Rustin and I get together to discuss topics in ecology, natural history. There's no ecology in mine whatsoever.
Nor in mine.
Okay.
That's a misnomer for this episode.
Yeah, it didn't go the route I wanted. Usually we discuss ecology, natural history, and evolution. I think we're going to branch off a bit in this episode.
Yeah, this is more of just a vague research episode.
There's not really any research in mind. It's just history. It is historical. It's not like a made-up animal.
Well, we've had episodes like that in the past where we've really just discussed historical events. Not a whole lot of ecology or evolution going on there.
Exactly. And they do overlap at times. And you know what? It's still fun topics.
Right. It's more of just like a vague nature podcast than anything specific.
We do a lot of ecology. Evolution, not as much. But they do go hand in hand. Can't have one without the other.
Exactly. And that is the bulk of the podcast. But that won't be the case this time around.
It was supposed to be research animals, but there wasn't a lot of research on my end. Maybe you had some. There was research, but it was incredibly dumb research.
I did have research in mind. There will be discussions of research in this episode and not just pure history, which seems to be the case for you.
Okay, so there are some famous research animals out there. Dolly the sheep, you know, that's one, the first cloned animal. Or Coco the gorilla.
Of course.
And I mentioned last time there's P22. That was the name of this one mountain lion, and it lived near LA, and people just tracked it. And it was... I made some rounds on Twitter, I guess. This topic is not like that, but it was simply too bizarre to cover. Without any further ado, this is my piece on Old Rip, the world's most famous horny toad. Have you heard of this before?
Not even remotely.
Okay, you're in for a ride. So first I'll talk about horny toads as a whole, bit of their biology, and then I'll discuss the legendary Ol' Rip.
I have several questions, but starting with why was it called Old Rip? But
that is important. I will get to that.
I'll let you go ahead.
So first off, what is a horny toad? These are a group of lizards. These are not actual toads. They're in the family Phrynosoma. They're also known as horned lizards or horned toads and sometimes horned frogs. I'm just going to call them horned toads.
So the TCU mascot, that's what we're talking about here?
Yes, that is exactly him.
Got it.
Yes. This is a group of about 20-some species and is found in the southwest United States down into Central America as well. Old Rip in particular was a Texas horned lizard. The scientific name is Phrynosoma cornutum, which roughly translates to horned toad body, and not super descriptive name. These are pretty small lizards. They only get about 3 to 5 inches long, excluding their short little tail. They're very shades of brown and kind of like a dull yellow, which gives them a lot of great camouflage. So that's their first way to evade predators.
Sand color.
Exactly. So they're going to match in with sand or dusty soil. They blend in very well to their respective environments.
Blended.
Of course. What? The Rango.
The guy. The guy in Rango just opens his eyes.
Blended. I let you kiss my sister. Anyways, so of course they are covered in spikes all over their head, back, legs, and tail. So if camouflage doesn't work, these lizards can puff themselves up, making them difficult to swallow, and potentially puncturing a predator's mouth with their spikes. This behavior is also very common in toads, where they kind of inflate themselves to appear bigger and be harder to swallow. So when you combine this behavior with the fact that they're very squat and rounded lizards as is, with the brown colors, bumpy texture, and a short tail, they actually do kind of resemble a toad. If I saw one from a distance just kind of scurry away, I wouldn't know if it was a toad or a lizard. I mean, when you get it up close, it's easy to tell. But you know what? The name toad does kind of fit. I'll give it that. Another interesting defense they have is they can shoot blood out of their eyes. It's kind of cool. They do this by building up blood pressure inside their head, and then they rupture the vessels in the eyelids, and this shoots blood up to about 5 feet. Sometimes this blood can be mixed with a foul-tasting liquid, and it can repel predators like foxes, coyotes, or wild dogs.
All right, that just might be the most metal defense mechanism I've ever heard of in the Animal Kingdom.
So there is one that is cooler. And have you heard of the Wolverine frog?
No.
They actually break their finger bones, like the ends of their fingers. It's not claws because frogs don't have claws. So they actually have to break their fingertips and get the bone to stick out to scratch a would-be predator. That's why they're called the Wolverine frog.
All right, that is awesome, but I'm still going to stick with blood shooting from the eyes.
Blood shooting from the eyes is pretty cool. Besides all this, these guys are absolutely harmless to people. Can't hurt you in any way. I actually think they're somewhat cute in a funky little reptile way. I mean, and they're tiny guys. They fit in the palm of your hand. They also mainly eat ants, so they're definitely a lizard you want to have in your garden. Just mind the blood squirts if you scare one. Actually, ants can make up to 70% of their diet. So I know of some people that have kept other species of horned lizard, not the Texas one because it is protected on a state level, and they have to douse their foods in formic acid as a supplement if they can't get ants for them, because that's the acid that's typically found in ants.
Really? So they rely on that acid, actually?
I don't know to the extent. This is just from people I have seen that keep them as pets. Many people don't, and I wouldn't recommend them as a pet because they do have very specific care. But interesting just to show how much they rely on ants.
I mean, it sounds like they'd thrive in the pantry right near the honey jar. Just ants all over the place.
Sit posted right there.
Yeah.
So everyone should have one in their house, really.
Right. Right. Seriously.
Yeah, I mean, they're tight. They fit in the palm of your hand. You see a trail of ants in your kitchen, you just set one down. As they walk by, you'll eat them up. Actually, they eat harvester ants specifically.
Oh, okay.
Those probably you won't have in your pantry. And of course, like many reptiles, they can undergo hibernation. Typically during the winter months, they'll hunker down underground for a few months and then emerge again in the spring. Many reptiles do this. And this is where the story of Old Rip begins.
Okay.
In July of 1898, four-year-old Will Wood caught a Texas horned lizard that he named Blinky.
Okay.
Will's father, Ernest E. Wood, took the pet and sealed it in a box.
Okay.
So at the time, there was this theory. Don't know where it came. I have an idea of where it came from. That the horned lizards could hibernate for 100 years. This was just common knowledge at the time. So basically just sleep without food or water. And Ernest Wood decided to test this theory and sealed up poor Blinky in a time capsule. And I don't know how he explained it to his son, but that's what he did.
That's terrible. I mean, kind of funny that you could really think that that would work, but terrible.
I don't know how he explained this to his kid, but that's what he did. And at the time, he was actually a county clerk and a new courthouse was being constructed. So Blinky was sealed inside a time capsule in the cornerstone of the courthouse, along with a Bible, some newspaper articles, a few coins, and a bottle of whiskey.
They already knew what the future was going to be like. They got that dead on. They're like, these people are going to need a whole lot of this.
And I don't know what he told his son. Like, hey, you like your new pet Blinky, right? I'm going to put him in a f***ing box.
Was that Frank's skateboard?
Yes, it's on par with that. And that's what happened. 30 years passed by. There's a recent oil boom in the town, and there was a big growing population in Eastland County, so they built a new courthouse, new Art Deco one, to accommodate the growing population. Ernest Wood, still alive 30 years later, actually went around telling people about the lizard. He was like hyping them up, like, the lizard is in the time capsule. They're done, tear it down. They can open up the cornerstone. He went around telling people, and eventually he passed the story along to reporter Boyce House. A crowd of a few thousand people gathered shortly after to witness the retrieval of the time capsule. So about 2,000 to 3,000 people with nothing better to do that day. There's not a lot to do in the late 1920s.
No. No. I mean, really, cars have only just been made widely available to the public, so you can't really go anywhere. Can't really do anything. Yeah, not very exciting.
So apparently Ernest Wood had a history of practical jokes, according to a 94-year-old eyewitness who was interviewed about this in the 2000s, long time after. So to verify the lizard was alive, a county judge officiated the event, along with a local reverend. One of the workers, Eugene Day, who also happened to be Ernest Wood's brother-in-law, pulled the lizard out. He passed it to the reverend, who held it up dangling by one leg and declared it's alive. And sure enough, it started wriggling around, and Blinky lived.
What?
Supposedly. Blinky's name was changed to Ol' Rip. And this is a reference to the book Rip Van Winkle, if you've heard of that. And it was about a man who fell asleep and aged 20 years.
Okay. The name sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah, I think I read it in elementary school, or like a picture book version of it. He like slept through the Revolutionary War or something like that. Popular book at the time, so they named him Ol' Rip. And of course, the lizard's popularity soared. One article published from Boyce House, the original reporter, called him, quote, the most famous animal since the snake from the Garden of Eden.
Whoa, okay. All right. I mean, there
were... Apparently, newspapers were discussing Ol' Rip almost as much as they were talking about Lindbergh crossing the Atlantic. Like, that's how big this was for the time. It is a lizard. It is a lizard in a box.
I mean... That was it. That's kind of fair. Lindbergh didn't survive 20 years in a box. He just flew across the Atlantic.
Flew across the Atlantic in one. Box with wings, really.
Yeah, and he was only in there for, what, like 36 hours?
That's nothing.
The lizard was in there for 20 years.
So for a while, Ol' Rip was kept in a shop window. Several scientists commented on the matter. Dr. Mann of the National Zoo said it was impossible for the lizard to survive without oxygen, water, and food. It was possible for the lizard to survive for a time without water and food, but not oxygen. It was a metal container sealed inside a cornerstone. There's no air in there. Or if there was any air, it was used up pretty quickly. Several other professors from Texas University declined the comment, but leaned towards skepticism. Only one zoologist that I could find, William Hornaday, who is a curator of the Bronx Zoo, said it was possible because he saw something similar in Sri Lanka, provided no further information at all. Okay. I'm not even certain this last bit was true because I could not find the original source for it.
Yeah, that definitely...
I found almost no one of any merit supporting this claim to be true.
Yeah, that really sounds like the kind of thing that he just made up, quite frankly.
I don't even know if this is a real person, frankly. A lot of this comes from the same reporter.
Okay.
So local residents, however, they disregarded all the scientific talk of oxygen, hibernation, and food supply. Their theory was that because he was next to the Bible, it gave him the strength to survive. Personally, the Bible might have done a little bit for him, but I think he was sipping that whiskey too.
Yeah, I think that was a very effective preservative that really kept his tissues from rotting out and allowed him to, you know, stay in a state of cryosleep, if you will, for 20 years.
So
I believe that before the Bible.
Yes.
Personally.
One article said that a team from Texas Christian University, like you said, whose mascot is the horned lizard, sent a team of biologists to inspect the lizard.
Wait, is this why their mascot is the horned frog?
I looked this up. No, their mascot was set in place like almost 100 years before this. So,
all right, that would have been kind of cool. Anyway, continue.
It would have been really cool, though. They found that Ol' Rip had worn down spikes, which someone equated to him trying to escape the time capsule. He was wearing his spikes on the side, maybe. His mouth and eyes were kind of sealed over, which is common for a horned lizard waking up from hibernation. They do kind of glaze over there, so that's fair. And he had a broken leg. I'm 99% certain the broken leg is from the Reverend dangling it in the air by one leg when it was first pulled out of the box. Because it is a tiny thing, just hold it by one leg. Besides that, Ol' Rip was fine. He was in good health.
Wow.
Thousands of people came to visit this lizard. There were postcards sold of him, merchandise. Everyone wanted one of these lizards as a pet. According to this same Boyce House article from 1929, horned lizards were sold as souvenirs everywhere, from pet stores to gas stations. Like, they were being handed out at gas stations with purchases of fuel.
And when they were handed out at gas stations, did they come in a box?
I don't know if they came in a box or if they held them out dangling by the legs and here you go. Yeah. I have no idea how the transaction went through. One guy who apparently bred them as pets saw his prices quintuple. Zoos had demands for them. Apparently, even in Australia, there's a request for these lizards to come over and being in their zoos. I don't know why that was significant. I guess because Australia has a lot of weird stuff as it is. And the fact that they wanted these lizards maybe said something. And they were so popular, they were given out as souvenirs at the 1928 Democratic Convention in Houston.
What?
You can't make this up. At a political rally, they're handing out lizards.
My God. Okay.
This is insane. According to this same 1929 article, these lizards were so popular that the Texas Department of Agriculture had to tell people to stop taking them since their numbers were decreasing so rapidly. And, you know, they eat ants, so they were beneficial for crops to keep them around. Apparently, the horned toad craze had started to impact their population. Researchers at Brown University were considering replicating this in their own experiment. And county officials actually wanted to make a new time capsule and throw a different lizard in it. And fortunately, animal rights groups stepped in and shot both these ideas down.
That would have been kind of cool to try and reproduce that.
Not for the lizard.
Oh, well, sure. But I mean,
forget about the poor lizard.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been pretty miserable for the lizard. Although, to be fair, it's not like we haven't also done far worse things to lizards in the name of scientific research. So
that's fair. That's certainly fair. So as it warmed up, old Rip became more active. He was kept in a goldfish bowl with sand and he was fed harvester ants. He was kept in a shop window. Will Wood, the original owner of old Rip back when he was called Blinky, actually took him on a tour to Dallas, drawing in thousands of people. And the community of Eastland was so distraught over this, he was sued for $6,000, the modern-day equivalent of $100,000 for breach of contract. I guess the city of Eastland had a right to him, and they wanted to maintain him there to keep up the tourism. But eventually, you couldn't keep old Rip down, and he did go on his tour. He stayed at various zoos or museums all across the country, and he brought in thousands of people, sometimes 10,000 people, coming to see this lizard. Otherwise ordinary lizard. He went up to St. Louis, Missouri, at the zoo. Then he went to New York City where he was filmed. Will Wood narrated about the lizard while a bug catcher was paid 50 cents for every bug old Rip ate on camera. That is about $9 for every bug he ate. Some kid is just out there catching bugs, feeding it to a lizard for $9 a pop. That's a lot of money.
Seriously, that's an amazing job.
That is a great job. You know, you gotta do is flip some rocks and get a jar.
Honestly, that's like, yeah, $9 for every bug the lizard eat? That's like college money.
He's probably eating. I mean, if they eat ants, they have to eat a lot of them.
Right.
You know, he might be eating like 20 bugs an hour.
That's what I'm saying.
$180 an hour. That's a pretty good job.
You have to go to law school to make that kind of hourly rate, man.
Or you just got to know the right connections. Old Rip. All of this came to a climax when Old Rip got to meet probably the most important man in the United States. The president, the goddamn president of the United States, Calvin Coolidge, met this lizard. He was introduced to him by the Texas senator, and the two just kind of stared at each other. Calvin didn't touch him or say anything, but he did lightly stroke him with his glasses. An article at the time said that Silent Cal had met his match.
Yeah, seriously? You know that lizard wasn't intimidated. He was like looking at the president going, yeah, I know you're the commander in chief and all. But I lived for 20 years without food or water. Could you do that? Hey,
30 years.
30 years. What? Even better.
He's probably just thinking, hey, when am I going to get my next aunt?
Yeah.
Get peckish. Calvin Coolidge delayed over 300 visitors so he could meet this lizard. Apparently, Coolidge had no intention of meeting with Will Wood until the Texas senator mentioned that he had old Rip with him. And then he's like, oh, no, I got to see this guy.
Oh, okay.
Old Rip was brought back to Eastland after this. You know, that was kind of the peak of his career. And he lived with Will Wood's family. But he died of pneumonia after Will's daughter accidentally left him outside in the cold, January 1929. Apparently, it was warm day, but it got a bit cool at night, and she forgot to bring him in. He didn't die right away, but a couple days later, yeah, he kicked the bucket.
That's disappointing.
Apparently, there is also a nearby lot that was filled with these lizards, and his daughter would just let him loose and run around with them, but she always knew which one was him. Because he had the limp, because he had the broken leg. So it was easy for her to... I guess she gave him a taste of freedom to hang out with some of his friends, and then she scooped him up again. Still, the body of Ol' Rip continued the tours, before finally settling in a glass coffin in the 40s at the Eastland Courthouse. In 1962, John Connally was running for governor, remember this name, and began touring the state. And for some sort of promotional thing, he decided to hold up the body of Ol' Rip by its leg, and it broke off right away.
Oh no.
And he still won the election, but Ol' Rip was now down a leg. This is the same John Connally who was sitting in front of JFK during the infamous Dallas motorcade. He was the one driving the car.
Wow. Somebody,
the
seriously.
This lizard has met.
Yeah, seriously, he was... John Connally sounds like he was honestly cursed.
I guess it just took a couple years for the curse to kick in.
Right, mutilating the body of a dead lizard, the Kennedy assassination. What else has he been involved in?
He actually picked up JFK afterwards, too. Also, by the leg, broke clean off. He kind of turned and said, guys, I got a problem.
Yeah, and then dangled the rest of the body in front of Jackie Onassis.
Whoops. Sorry, guys. Insane. So, Ol' Rip, down a leg, back in his glass coffin. And throughout the years, there was a couple times when Ol' Rip was stolen. In the 70s, a group of pranksters stole Ol' Rip. And while he was recovered, some eyewitnesses said that when they got the body, it had magically regrown a limb. But then, you know, later he was missing his leg again. Not sure if this is accurate or not. Maybe they just grabbed another dead lizard and then they just chopped the leg off and said it was Ol' Rip and no one noticed. I don't know. And there's also some anonymous letters from people claiming that they put the horny toad in the cornerstone in 1927, just a year before. And that, you know, the whole thing was a fake. And then one group said that they still had the original body from the 70s and the new one was a fake. Can't know for sure on that. But Ol' Rip's legacy continues on. He was one of the first mentions in Ripley's Believe It or Not columns. Like, he was, like, one of the first mentions. Like, the first time it was published, Ol' Rip was, like, one of the first few things. Huh. There were dozens of comics, political cartoons, articles, and merchandise about Ol' Rip. I don't know if you've seen this. There's, like, a Looney Tunes short about a frog where he sings, like, hello, my baby, hello,
yeah,
my honey.
Yeah.
That is inspired by Ol' Rip.
Is it really?
In the short, a guy opens a time capsule and he finds a singing frog and he thought it was going to make him rich.
Yeah, and yeah, that's like...
That is inspired by Ol' Rip.
That's like one of the most iconic Warner Brother cartoons, one of the originals.
Yes, Ol' Rip. Ol' Rip did that. In the town of Eastland, he still appears on billboards and diners. He has a statue. There's a festival every year. They used to actually race horned lizards, but now they just race cars decorated like lizards. And you can still visit him in his coffin, now much more secure, in the Eastland Courthouse.
Yeah, I'm being totally serious. So when I was a kid, I was told about that cartoon and, you know, saw the whole thing with the dancing frog and how the frog couldn't perform in front of people. And so whenever I would get nervous, like, for example, like if I was playing sports or something and I would like hit a cool shot and I'd be like, hey, Dad, come out. Come on. Come see this. I would like try and shoot it again, and I would keep messing up because I was nervous. I would go, well, I can't do it right now with people watching because I'm really nervous. My dad would look at me and just go, hello, my baby. Hello, my honey. Hello, my ragtime. Yeah. Wow.
Without you knowing it, Ol' Rip has had an influence on your life.
Yes. What?
It's like fifth or sixth degree. That's this. Freaking lizard, man.
All that
is
came
just
from
a lizard.
All that came from a damn hibernating lizard. Wow.
Yes, a lizard in a box. That was it.
Crazy.
is so insane. There's so much more to this. You can still find like merchandise for them. I went online, I looked up old Rip. They still have like ceramic lizards from, I think, like the 60s you can buy. So you could put in a time capsule of your own and bury him for 30 years. Won't be a live one, but it's probably better for everyone.
You know, I think next Halloween, if I can't make it to a party, I'm just going to say that I'm there in spirit and just send a box to the party and just say that I'm dressed up as old Rip in hibernation.
Or you could just go in a box.
Right, but then I'll just be in the box the whole time and I won't be doing anything, so no one will know the difference if I just send a box.
Okay, fair enough. We'll just say Rustin's in the box, but he can't open it up for 30 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Just hope no one does. Oh, yeah, there's a neat little documentary online called Toad Spotting, The Legend of Old Rip. It doesn't really cover too much on the history of Old Rip, but more of like the cultural impact in the town of Eastland.
Got it. Okay.
So that's the story of Old Rip. I have two things to debunk about this. One, did Old Rip really survive 30 years in hibernation?
I'm
going
to say no.
No, not at all. It did not happen. There is no way. He had no water or food. Okay, that's fine. He had no air. You can't last that long without air. He is sealed up in a box. Horned toads rarely live longer than 10 years, let alone 30. There are some animals that can survive long periods of time without access to food or water. Many animals do hibernate. There are some, like nematodes or tardigrades, that can dehydrate or be frozen for hundreds of years.
Sure.
Brine shrimp eggs can survive total dehydration for years and then hatch out as soon as it rains. And there are some vertebrates, like wood frogs, that can survive being frozen up to 8 months. And lungfish can survive a few years in a mucus cocoon out of water. Almost all of these animals still need air to survive. None can last 30 years. The only animals that can survive without air usually do it in a specific form of life. So it's like an egg or a larva, or they have to enter a state of dehydration where they'll kind of shrivel up into a ball or cocoon to survive. And the animals that do this are usually microscopic or very simple. They don't have nearly as complex anatomy as a vertebrate. There are no amphibians, reptiles, mammals, birds that can last for 30 years in a box without food, water, or oxygen. They're going to need oxygen. And this is so stupid, but this has been tested many times in the past. Living in entombment was a hot topic in the 1700s, where there were these cases of frogs or toads being trapped in rocks, and they would survive for years and then be unearthed and hop out. However, most of these had very little evidence, or the people that reported these claims were also known for other hoaxes. A proper experiment was done in the 1800s by a geologist, William Buckland, who just sealed toads in carved limestone containers, covered them with a glass, and then buried them in his yard. A few years later, he dug them up, and would you know it, they were all dead, except for two. The two that were still alive had giant cracks in them. So he saw that they had air, they had water, and they had food. Oh. Insects would crawl in.
Oh, okay.
So that's why they were alive.
Got it.
So maybe you can keep them in this stone container, but if it's sealed up, they're going to die. If living entombment had any credibility, it would have been replicated for one. Do you know who also would have supported it? Actual geologists. They're digging up rocks all the time. You'd think they just go, oh, there's another toad rock. You know, it'd just be like a casual thing for them. Now, if it had any truth whatsoever, we would have seen this by now. There's a famous image of like a geode that's been cut open and there's like a frog inside that's dead. And it's, nope, the geode was cut open and someone put a frog in there. That was it. There's nothing else to it. I think the legend of these frogs and toads surviving being entombed back from the 1700s is probably what inspired the myth of the horny toads to be able to do so. Just because the name is similar, I think by extension, that's how the myth that they could do so passed around.
Okay.
So Old Rip was most likely placed in there the day before and resealed. And then everyone was in on it to get publicity. These hoaxes happen all the time. Also worth noting, the guy that pulled old Rip out was Ernest Wood's brother-in-law, the guy who put him in there in the first place. So what are the odds he just did a sleight of hand when no one was looking? I mean, they didn't let Ernest Wood go up to, you know, verify it, but they sent one of his family members instead. The lizard fits in the palm of your hand. Like, it's like a ping pong ball. You just put it up your sleeve, switch it out. Simple as that.
And then you just have to cover up the scratches from the spines that inevitably wind up on your forearm after you've, you know, palmed and stuffed away the little lizard.
I don't even think they're that spiny. I mean, they are spiny, but they're really small, you know? I don't think it'll do too much to you. And I don't know, maybe had a little compartment. I mean, he could have just wrapped it up in a handkerchief, you know? Put it in his shirt pocket.
Well, putting it in the shirt pocket could have gotten awkward as soon as it started squirting blood everywhere.
Oh, sorry, I'm chafing. Ran a marathon earlier. He's could cut through diamonds, let me tell you. So no, old Rip did not survive in there. There was no photo evidence of when it happened. There's some recreation photos. And conveniently, the guy that wrote all these articles about old Rip and his legacy was the same guy who reported on him at the start. So it's like, You have a lot to gain from hyping this up. That's why I wonder if some of these numbers were a bit boosted. That being said, there are proper newspapers at the time. He did meet the president. He was very popular, and he still does have statues and merchandise everywhere, and there's still festivals for him. I don't know if he was actually as impressive as Lindbergh crossing the Atlantic.
Well, if real, then yeah, but he's almost certainly not real, so no.
Okay, lastly, the 1929 article by House suggested the horn tones became so popular that the numbers started rapidly declining. It's definitely popular for humans to deplete natural populations through collection for the pet trade. This has happened before. In actuality, I don't think this made a huge dent just because, A, these lizards were very plentiful, and while their numbers did go down, it was almost certainly due to agricultural expansion and habitat loss, along with loss of food source. So pesticides would deplete the harvester ants, which was their main food source.
Sure.
Along with the invasion of fire ants at the time, which is an invasive species in Texas, which would both compete with the harvester ants and also attack horned lizards. Yes, the numbers are much lower today. I don't think it's because people were just picking them off the side of the road like crazy. I'm sure that didn't help, but this, by all accounts, this fad didn't last longer than a year. And the legend of Old Rip continues on today. The Texas horned lizard is threatened in the state of Texas, but the species is now protected, and I do think this is because of the beloved legacy of Old Rip.
Yeah, he's really like horned lizard Jesus. He died so everyone else could live.
He really did. He didn't rise again 3 days later. He took his time with it, but he did rise again.
He rose 30 years later.
And Old Rip is now, not Old Rip specifically. The Texas horned lizard is now the state reptile of Texas.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah,
good. Well, I mean, they got a lot of history with it.
Sure.
And that is my piece. Nothing scientific about it, but it's just, I couldn't not talk about it.
Well, it was still a really cool story, even if there wasn't much science involved.
It's just bizarre. The impact one lizard could have.
Seriously.
And for all I know, they could have switched him out like every couple of days. I mean, it could have been 1,000 old rips.
Yeah, yeah.
I know there's at least two. Old Rip, it might have gone into that time capsule, but he did not come out. There was some sleight of hands crap there. Or just three guys got in on it because they knew it would raise money for tourism. And you know what? Can't blame him for that. You want to see your town prosper. Certainly brought a lot of attention to local businesses.
Certainly a good way to get yourself in the limelight.
It did, in a roundabout way, help the horned lizards as a whole because they're protected in Texas. And I don't know if they would be without Old Rip existing. Hopefully a lot of people did not try to replicate the same thing and they're just stuffing them into whatever containers they could and putting them in the ground.
Yeah, I really hope so. I feel like it should be pretty self-explanatory at this point. But the story is still pretty cool.
It's a very cool story. And like I said, you can still visit him to this day. Eastland, Texas, they still got statues, billboards, festivals, and you can see old Rip himself in his little glass coffin. More secure now. That is my piece. What do you got for me?
When you said you wanted to talk about research animals, I pretty much thought that this would inevitably lead us to the field of psychology, because research animals in other fields are far more disposable. Once they're used for one study, the effects of that study often mean that they are unfit for successive studies. So as a result, they don't participate in many studies and don't have the opportunity to gain much notoriety.
So you're telling me you actually stuck with the topic in hand?
Yes. Yes, Aaron.
Yeah. Hey, it's on me. I thought for sure there'd be like someone publishing something about this lizard, but now I guess everyone realized it was just too ridiculous to bother with. Anyways, resume.
Yeah, I actually stayed on topic. What a novel concept. Anyway, this phenomenon that I'm talking about is not necessarily the case in psychology, where animals aren't really given any physical life-threatening injuries, just terrifying emotional trauma. As a result, they can be used in more studies to test their intelligence and perception. At the dawn of this field, there was one animal in particular which piqued the interest of people all around the world for its supposed ability to speak and even do complicated math problems. Do you have any kind of idea what animal it was?
Ability to speak, I'm going to guess a parrot?
Or not speak, but understand language, I should say.
Okay, so not a parrot.
No.
Chimpanzee?
No. Good guess, though. It was actually a German horse named Hans.
This is
funnily enough. I'm not making this up. This is an actual thing.
There's nothing scientific about this episode.
That's not true. Okay. There is science here, I promise you. There is very technical scientific methodology that is referenced in this piece. Don't worry, I'll get there. First, I have to talk about the actual horse itself. Our story begins in Germany in around 1900, when Hans the horse started being trained by a fellow named Wilhelm von Austin, who was a mathematics teacher. Austin spent the next 4 years training this horse to understand and count using numbers. At a certain point, the horse could apply those numbers to things like clocks, calendars, and even playing cards. Hans actually understood the numbers so well that he was able to translate that into an understanding of written language. So using a system substituting letters for numbers, Hans was able to spell out the answers to questions. Kind of like Uncle Hector in Breaking Bad, you know, in the wheelchair with the bell.
Last chance to look at me, Hans.
Yeah, seriously. Because...
If I had a pair of coconuts, it would have been better.
But I'm being totally serious. Hans would actually indicate the answers to these questions by tapping numbers on the ground with his hoof. Right? So somebody would ask him, oh, what time is it? You know, hold up a clock, and Hans would tap the different numbers and such. So this, as you might expect, was a pretty big deal, right? This was an indication that a horse could solve math problems and count people in a crowd and read a clock and do all these things that we all thought only people could do, right? We didn't think that animals possessed this kind of intelligence, at least not at the time. Everyone wanted to study this horse and see the horse do its thing and really verify and see this quote-unquote thinking animal. Initially, people thought it was just some kind of elaborate trick that Austin was playing on the audience, right? They thought that he was giving some kind of special cue to Hans, and then Hans was giving the correct answer based on those cues. And that Hans wasn't actually thinking for himself. Personally, I don't think this hoax theory really undermines Hans's intelligence that much, because it still means that he had to be smart enough to understand and respond to all of Austin's cues. Would have had to be really complex, you know, to account for all the different types of questions that Hans was being asked.
That's true. Even if it was all fake, by all intents and purposes, it's still a very smart horse to be trained that way.
Exactly, and he still did a hell of a job training him. So that in and of itself is impressive, even if Hans isn't actually able to think. Soon, scientists from all over Europe were coming to ask him questions and examine Hans. Right? This was, like I said, a monumental discovery. People were shocked and awed, and it was in newspapers, you know, not unlike old Rip. Hans was so good that he could even look at a painting and answer with the name of the correct artist. right? This horse knew about art. He could do the same thing with pieces of classical music. If you played him the Fifth Symphony, he could tell you that it was Beethoven who wrote it. This horse was seriously, seriously smart, at least by all appearances. And I can see you're trying to figure out where the catch is here, right?
Do you have like a limp leg and there's like some fishing line and the owner would just sort of clop out whatever the answer was?
Not quite. The answer's a bit more complicated. And it's honestly very interesting. Of course, researchers wanted to know if this horse really understood numbers and language and art the way people do. And after years of examination, Hans had actually convinced most of the people who tested him that he was legit. You know, they even started calling him Der Kluge Hans or Clever Hans. That's officially like the main nickname for this horse, is Clever Hans. And this remained the case until a guy named Oscar Fungst, P-F-U-N-G-S-T. I do not know how to pronounce that name. Maybe someone from our Belgian fan base can tell us after this airs. But for now, I'm going to call him Fungst. Anyway, this guy tested Hans and actually determined how Hans was able to answer all these questions. Fungst discovered that Hans was unable to answer a question correctly if the examiner did not already know the answer.
So, okay, his conclusion was that the horse was psychic.
You're not that far off, honestly. Seriously. Furthermore, Hans could not answer a question correctly if he could not see the examiner's face. So, it turned out that Hans was just exceptionally good at reading facial cues and was able to determine which of the squiggly lines on the ground he needed to tap with a hoof based on almost microscopic movements of the examiner's eyes and face. And this went beyond Osten, his original trainer. He was tested by dozens, if not hundreds, of different people without Osten there and was still able to answer these questions. Like I said, he had lots and lots of people convinced that he was a real thinking horse who had the brain capacity of a human. And he had convinced all these people, but in all these cases, he could see their face. Of course, if the trainer didn't know the answer, then they wouldn't display those same kind of facial cues to Hans, which would leave Hans in the dark, and Hans wouldn't be able to answer the question. So, in a way, it was a hoax, because Hans didn't actually understand numbers and art and music the way that many at first thought he did, but it led to a far more remarkable discovery, which is that some animals are incredibly perceptive of human facial movements and can use those cues to interact with people.
So Hans was just an amazing poker player.
Seriously, yes.
What the takeaway is.
Yes, exactly.
And don't horses also have a blind spot?
Because
their eyes
yes.
are on the side. So to test the being able to read the face there, what did they do? Did they kind of get up real close to him and just kind of move so he couldn't see their face? Or well, do you no, think so, they just covered up their face? That'd be a lot easier.
No, so this one scientist who found out these limitations of Hans's question answering capability performed these experiments where he was asking the questions from behind a barrier or with a mask on, and then was able to determine that, okay, my cues of, you know, my face or my body language are giving tips to this horse where maybe I'm a little tense around one particular number or kind of looking in one direction or something like that, or my face is twitching just a little bit, and that's something that the horse can read. At least that was the theory, and that held water over successive tests. And the thing about this discovery was that it had huge implications for the way psychological studies could be conducted on animals, right? Because from this point on, we knew that the researcher could not test the animals with their face visible to the subject. Otherwise, the animal could read their face and give a correct answer, just like Hans did, right? So it turns out, like you said, animals would make phenomenal poker players. This is why some poker players are better than others, because they're able to read facial cues, and why some players wear glasses, because a lot of those cues are based around the eyes.
There's the one famous game with all the dogs.
Yeah. And then there's the one German horse who just cleans everyone out. What's interesting is that this rule about facial visibility isn't always closely followed. Many studies conducted after Hans did not take his story into consideration and allowed the research subject a full view of the researcher's face.
it's entirely possible that if they were conducting those studies on something like, you know, a rabbit, a dog, or a cat, that animal could look at the face of the researcher and read those cues and try and what the answer should be in order to get a reward. And it, so instead of being able to understand the question and really giving a good idea of their actual intelligence, the way the research study was supposedly designed, they're instead just trying their best to get a reward and reading facial cues. In other words, they're just kind of bluffing their way through the whole thing. Overall, at least in my mind, the phenomenon doesn't mean that animals are less intelligent than our tests suggest. They're just finding answers in different and perhaps more practical ways than humans do, right? This skill set that animals possess and that Hans demonstrated back in the 1900s is really, really useful if you think about it from an evolutionary perspective, because the cues that you might pick up from a predator or from a, you know, a competitor or something like that are really, really affect your ability to say, you know, first of all, evade predation, or maybe, you know, find a mate, or, you know, improve your social standing or doing things like that. The skill set is really, really important. And it makes a lot of sense that animals have this kind of ability to read faces. It just happens to mess up a lot of studies on intelligence. Even in human society, this skill set is really, really important. You brought up poker, but anyone who's tried to climb a career ladder knows that in a lot of cases, networking is often as important, if not more so, than how good you are at your job. Right? There's that old saying, it's not what you know, but who you know. And to me, at least, Clever Hans is proof of that. Clever Hans was able to read people, so he knew who was giving them the test, but he didn't really know what the questions requiring of him. That's my piece.
That is really interesting.
So even though he didn't actually know all the answers to those questions, he still brings up a lot of really, really interesting ideas about animals and how they interact with people and, you know, how they and how research studies are conducted on them and the limitations that we have.
And that's really interesting what you say about studies being done with animals seeing the researcher's face and essentially doing what the researchers want. Which, I mean, for the animals, that doesn't make them dumber. That just makes them, hey, this is how I get the food. I don't have to understand how to solve this problem. I just have to know how to read this guy's face.
Right. It just makes them more practical in a way, you know?
So I guess you either set up cameras for it or maybe like hand everyone a Darth Vader mask.
Yeah, exactly. You just conduct the study as if you're robbing a bank.
Yeah, I guess a ski mask would be better. I have one of those Optimus Prime helmets you put on and you like press a button. It's supposed to change your voice sound like Optimus Prime, but all it does is add static to it. Maybe they could do that.
I'm sure they've come up with a lot of different clever solutions. But because really it just amounts to a form of confirmation bias, right? Mm-hmm. You want a certain result and you're subconsciously giving off cues in your face and body language that animals can pick up on. It's just one more thing you have to control for. Sometimes researchers don't. And it's something of a contentious topic, right? Because it's a really, really inconvenient thing to do. You know, you have to design study rooms and research, you know, study design so that the animals can't interact with the researcher. You know, and so in a lot of cases, we have this idea that, you know, psychological researchers are very detached and, you know, emotionless and dead inside because they remain completely detached from their subjects and have no attachment, at least in a lot of pop culture, you know. But after reading this story, it kind of makes a bit more sense, right? They're trying to just remove themselves from the results and trying to just obtain usable, valuable data that doesn't have these kinds of confounding variables. So it kind of helps you put a different lens on that sort of study.
Yeah, it certainly does. That's just so interesting. And it did tie up to be scientific in the end.
I told you. I did tell you.
Maybe there's a guy and he's defending his PhD in psychology and they just sort of, someone wants to give him a hard time and goes, ah, but did you adjust for Hans's horse law or something like that?
Yeah.
Or the Hans phenomenon.
Right, right. Have you heard of Clever Hans the horse?
Yes.
Did it occur to you that your super smart rabbit Herbert might be a Hans the horse type individual?
On the other hand, if you have one of those animals, my God, get them in the casino.
Yeah.
No, you know what this, this is the next Ratatouille. All this is the next Ratatouille.
Yes.
Stick a little, so we get like a 10-gallon hat and you put a little guy in there and have like a little camera.
Right, right. Well, yeah. Well, Remy didn't need a camera to see all the food, so I don't see why the rat in...
Yeah, I guess...
What would you call this movie? Some kind of rat or mouse pun?
I can't think of anything on this.
The full mouse.
Okay, okay. Yeah, that can work. That can work. Yeah, you put him in there. You get a little camera hooked up. All you gotta do is just train him to tap on your head when someone is calling a bluff. That is somewhat feasible. Like, you don't need any like fancy hair pulling. You just train him like Pat or something when someone is telling a bluff, and then you call it. It'll be the best poker player out there.
I could write this script.
We could write this in an hour.
Seriously. Tune in next week when we write this movie. With my piece being finished, in all seriousness, do you have any ideas for our next episode?
I've kind of picked the last couple. Do you have anything in mind?
What about a hibernation episode?
Yeah, we could do a What? Is that based off old Rip?
You know, it's not why I came up with the idea.
Okay, yeah, we can do one on actual hibernation.
Right, verified, scientifically confirmed incidences of hibernation.
Not put in a time capsule in a church with a bottle of whiskey and a Bible.
No, no. So, with that decided, do you want to take us out?
If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a like or review on your podcast app of choice. And if you have a suggestion for a future episode, you can reach us at Soup Pup Podcast on Twitter or theprimordialsouppod@gmail.com.
All right. And until next time, I'm Rustin.
And I'm Aaron.
See ya.